And so bringing civility back between, let's say, your average Trump supporter and your average Brooklyn resident, I mean, how easy or difficult would that be, and how would we even go about that?
You know, this is where I don't want to – I hope people will buy the book. I think it's a beautiful – you know, it tells a lot of beautiful stories of people who have – left extraordinary lives of hate behind, combined with the research and science and history of hate and the actual, you know, step-by-step prognosis of what we do about it. But at the end of the day, this isn't that complicated. It's you know, the reasons, the history, our own sense of it, all of that, of course, is complicated. The public policies that got us here and the ones aren't, of course, complicated when we think about the history of slavery and segregation and sexism and right and rural-urban dynamics. All that's complicated. At the end of the day, trying to remember that in spite of your differences and disagreements, which I don't ever want to minimize and I think are important to us as people and as a country, in spite of that, we are still all human beings who deserve love and dignity and equal treatment, including from each other. Actually, at the end of the day, what that means, how we would then think about and treat each other, isn't that different because it's what we already do to the people we think of as quote-unquote like ourselves. We give them the benefit of the doubt. We give them grace. We give them forgiveness. We let people not be the worst things they've ever done in their lives or the worst things they've ever said in their lives. And you know, at the end of the day, like, we all know how to be nice. I think we do. But I think we've forgotten that in addition to wanting everyone to do it for ourselves, we have to do it for others.
Because you wrote about several different people, it's a bit of an unfair question to say who's your favorite, but maybe I could ask, you know, who moved you the most? As you say, ex-Nazis, ex-terrorists, people like that.
Yeah. I say in this moment, especially with what's happening in Syria, I'm thinking a lot about Bassam Ahriman, who's one of the people in my book who, when he was a teenager, was convicted of terrorism for an act that actually he wasn't physically present during. No one was harmed in, but nonetheless, he was convicted of terrorism, sent to prison, and in an Israeli prison, Bassam, who's Palestinian, in an Israeli prison, he watched a film about the Holocaust, which transformed his whole life. Every idea he'd ever had about Israel and Jews, which he'd conflate and all of that, it transformed his life. After prison, he ended up getting a master's degree in Holocaust studies. He went on to found an organization of former Palestinian combatants and former Israeli combatants and those who'd served in the Israeli Defense Forces and started an organization working for peace. And I look at the fact that it is, you know, of course, in these incredibly brutal and entrenched and often dehumanizing dynamics in these intractable conflicts, like in the Middle East, like in Israel, Palestine, or in Syria, there are also examples of people who have transcended that hate and are trying to work to build an alternative future beyond hate and rehumanize each other and talk about peace instead of violence and connection and kindness instead of hate. And I have to be honest, in moments especially like these, I cling to those desperately as a reminder of what it's possible for human beings to do in the face of, obviously, the ugly brutality we're also capable of.
What is emotional correctness? It's actually, I believe, something you've been talking about long before you put pen to paper or fingers to laptop to write this book.
Emotional correctness was a term that I talked about in my first TED Talk. When I was still, you know, really wrestling with the same ideas that ended up crystallizing into my book, The Opposite of Hate. So emotional correctness is, look, I think political correctness is incredibly important. It's actually also not that complicated. It's really just talking respectfully and kindly to each other. And, you know, we tend to not mind it so much when we're the recipients, but if we see it as some sort of onus or it's been politicized into becoming a one-directional problem. So, but I think political correctness is important. I don't think it's the entire answer. And what also matters is not just the words we say to each other, but how we communicate with each other, the intent that we convey and the intent we assume, trying to talk to others as though we assume the best in them, and trying to listen as though we assume the best in them. And to me, that's really the core of the concept of emotional correctness. Just like we're all at whatever explicit conscious hate you have, at an unconscious level, we're all more likely, all of us, men and women, are all more likely to be biased towards men unconsciously than women, biased towards white people than black people. That's because of society's history and patterns of hate that then we all breathe in because we live in this society, whether you're, you know, kids, adults, et cetera, and need to work on unraveling at every one of those levels.